Okay, so the Midrash in Eicha Rabbah describes the destruction of Beitar. Bar Kokhba had set up his final rebellion against the Romans, and his stronghold was the city of Beitar. Now you would think that you're fighting the Romans, you're fighting the greatest superpower in the world, that you would want all the help you could get, you would want to get all the forces you could muster, and if you were somewhat religious, as Bar Kokhba seems to have been, part of his objective was to save Yerushalayim, you would think that he would want God. But Bar Kokhba, according to the Midrash, had a rallying cry where he would simply say to God, "Don't help me and don't hurt me." Right? "We don't want your help. We don't want you to hurt us. Just leave us alone." Right? "Leave us alone and we'll take care of this by ourselves." Now, at first glance, that seems like a horrible anti-religious statement. Right? You can't do anything without God. However, the Midrash continues that in Beitar, Bar Kokhba's uncle was present as well. And Bar Kokhba's uncle was Rabbi Elazar HaModai. And Rabbi Elazar HaModai had a very strange tefillah. And he used to daven every day, "God, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't judge them today. Don't judge them today." If you think about it, we know that there was another rabbinic figure who was involved in the Bar Kokhba revolt, and that was Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Kiva said, "Bar Kokhba is the Mashiach." He had these grand visions for Bar Kokhba, that you had this hero, this military strongman who was mounting rebellion against the Romans. He saw in this the seeds of redemption. He saw in this Mashiach. On the flip side, you had Yeshua ben Tarta, who said, it's the opposite, right? He's nothing. And Chazal suggests that perhaps he was even put to death. So you had, amongst the rabbis, you had diametrically opposed views. You had Rabbi Kiva, who saw Bar Kokhba as the be-all and end-all, as the Mashiach, as the hero, as the salvation. And you saw those who saw Bar Kokhba as a dangerous false messiah, as it were. But then in the middle, you have Bar Kokhba and Rabbi Elazar HaModai. And Rabbi Elazar HaModai seems to be the religious mirror of Bar Kokhba. Because what did Bar Kokhba say? Bar Kokhba said, "I don't want God's help, and I don't want God to hurt us. Instead, just leave us alone. Leave us alone and we'll manage." And the Midrash says it wasn't just him. Other people amongst his ranks would say this at different opportunities. But Rabbi Elazar HaModai, when you think about his tefillah is really the same thing. He doesn't daven for Bar Kokhba. He doesn't daven against Bar Kokhba. He says, "God, look, just don't judge them today." And the Midrash leaves it open. And the Midrash tells you that his tefillah is successful and Bar Kokhba is successful. But it leaves the question open, what exactly was the success? You could say that what Rabbi Elazar HaModai was davening for was, "Don't judge them today, help them." And therefore, it's a mirage. Bar Kokhba thought he was winning because he was so strong and God left him alone and he was in neutral. And Bar Kokhba was so strong that even with God out of the picture, he was strong enough to defeat the Romans. Or Rabbi Elazar HaModai was the spiritual reason that God listened to Bar Kokhba. Right? No one really deserves to have God leave them alone. There is no neutral in this world. Right? Either Bar Kokhba was a terrible person and deserved for God to allow the Romans to destroy him, or he was a positive person and he deserved for God to help him, or help him even if he didn't deserve it, to help the Jewish people. But Rabbi Elazar HaModai's tefillah, "Don't judge them today," the simplest understanding is that he was saying, "Look, I get it. Bar Kokhba doesn't deserve for you to leave the picture and leave him to his own devices, but do it anyways." Right? Do it anyways. Right? And when you read that, it's quite a radical statement by the Midrash. that that was what happened. Bar Kokhba said, leave me alone. And Elazar Modai said, that may be the wrong thing to ask for, but do it for him. Then the Midrash continues. The Midrash tells you, so how exactly did he lose? You had Elazar Modai standing behind him, so how did he lose? So there was a Kuti who understood what was going on. So he said to the Romans, look, you're not going to win until you take out this one person. So he says, so how am I going to take him out? He said, leave it to me. So he goes in. He's a turncoat, so he can make it into Beitar. He gets into Beitar, and he goes over to Elazar Modai, and he whispers something in his ear for a little bit. And Elazar Modai barely notices what's going on, and then he leaves. And then this Kuti tells Bar Kokhba, Elazar HaModai is going to give you over to the Romans. He's going to put out the white flag, and he's going to say that you surrender. Right? That's the message that was going. Right? That was the message. And Bar Kokhba goes to Elazar HaModai and says, "What did you say to him? Right? What did he say to you? What did you say to him?" He says, "I don't know. I barely noticed that he was there." And he's so enraged because he believes the message that Elazar HaModai was going to give him over to the Romans, was going to capitulate, that he kicks his uncle and he kills him. And a Bosco comes out and says, you idiot, right? You had your uncle. He was the right arm of Yisrael, and now he's gone. Now you're going to lose. And the war turns. Beitar is destroyed. And Bar Kokhba's head is brought to the Romans, and they say, this is from God, and they recognize that they couldn't have won if it weren't for God. And you look at this Midrash, and as I said before, you wonder, what is the message? Is it possible that, the Pasuk says that the danger of the Jews is that one day we'll be rich, we'll be successful, and we'll say, Kochi va'otzem yadi asal li'era chayelaze, it was our own strength. But the simple read of the Midrash, right, if I asked you, why is it wrong to say, Kochi v'otzem yad, yasa leidach ha'el hazeh, be one of two possibilities. Right? Either it's because it's impossible to do anything without God, or it's theoretically possible to do something without God, but factually we didn't. We usually don't. Right? You go to the story and it's an open question. Right? Did Bar Kokhba succeed because Elazar HaModai had God on his side even though he didn't deserve it? Or is this a case in history where magically, miraculously, God pulled out and you had somebody who managed to actually do it? And the Midrash leaves it open. Right? You don't know what the answer is. Right? It seems like Elazar HaModai created this situation. Now, I can't answer which of those it was. But I was thinking about it, and the truth is that you have an almost identical scene in Navi that sheds light on this moment in the Churban. If you look in Malachim, Elisha is the miracle worker. And there's countless stories in the Navi of all the miracles that Elisha performed. So, in one of the most dramatic moments, Aram is constantly fighting the Jews. They're carrying out these raids against the Jews. And each time they carry out a raid, Elisha sends a message to the king of Israel, and he says, Aram's going to be there. So, they avoid it, right? They catch them, and at some point, the king of Aram says, I don't know what's going on, right? Who here is a spy? How is it that Israel, every single time, they know what's going on? And one of his servants says, look, there's no spy. Yesh Navi be Israel. There's a Navi. There's a miracle worker. His name is Elisha. And until you capture Elisha, you're never going to win. He knows what you say in your bedroom. There's no secrets from Elisha. So the king of Aram says, I got it. Sends an army in the middle of the night to capture Elisha. Elisha's servant walks out the door. The city is surrounded by Aram. And he says, Oyvei, right, we're done. It's all over. And Elisha says, please, right? God, open his eyes. See that we're not alone. We have more men on our side than he does. And he opens the eyes of the Na'ar and he looks around, and there's hundreds of fiery horses and malachim. At that point, Elisha strikes them down. He says, God, strike them, son of Abraham, make them blind, which is either physical blindness or make them lose perception. They can't see. They don't know that Elisha's there. So Elisha goes over them and he says, you want to know where Elisha is? Come with me. And he walks them to Shomron, to the capital of Israel, within the wall. So now they're captured. He gets into Shomron and he davens to Hashem and he says, open their eyes. And they look around. And they realize they're in the enemy capital, surrounded by the army, surrounded by the walls. And they say, we're all dead. And the king says to Elisha, Avi, my father, should I kill them? You brought them here, should I kill them? And he yells at him and he says, absolutely not. Did you capture them? I captured them. Don't kill them. Give them a feast and send them back to their master. And that's what he does. And at least temporarily, this act of magnanimous generosity by Elisha convinces Aram that something is different about Yisrael, and they stop the raids. But it's only temporary. The next perek tells that Aram starts up their war again. And the famine is terrible. And it comes to a climax where a woman comes to the king and says, it's horrible. We were starving. Yesterday I made a deal with this woman. I killed my son and we ate my son. And she promised that today we would eat her son. And now she's not giving me her son. And the king has a breakdown at this point. And he says, bring me Elisha and let me kill him. Why was he so angry? So some of the modern Mefarshim, Alama Tanakh and others, point out, because if you read the story in order, it's not fair. He says, look, I had the chance to kill Aram. Elisha brought them in. And then he said, now leave them, let them go. And now they've come back. And now there's a famine because Aram is tortured, tormenting us and besieging us. It's Elisha's fault. And then Elisha tells him, don't worry about it, right? Tomorrow, everything will be fine, and that's what happens. The story of the Arba Mitzoraim, who find out that God had scared them away, etc. But if you think about that moment, it's the same as the Bar Kokhba moment. Right? It turns out that what did Elisha really accomplish in the first story? It wasn't a victory. What he was really saying was, to quote the Midrash, God, don't do it today. Right, today they should have been their end. It should have been the end of the Jewish people. Right, here was Aram coming. They were going to take the Navi. They would lose their hope. And Elisha, instead of bringing a great victory and destroying Aram, all he did was delay it. He said, God, don't do it today. Bring them in, give them a meal, convince them they shouldn't wage war. Temporary respite. Give it a little bit of time and it'll dissipate. This time Elisha isn't there to protect you. So then everything will go back to normal. But then you have to ask, so why? Right? So why? The king is angry at Elisha, and Elisha performs another miracle to save the Jews. But why in the first story then did Elisha do that? Did he say the right thing right now is to hold everything in abeyance? Right? Not to defeat Aram, but to just not defeat them and not let them win either. Send them home. And the answer is because they didn't deserve it. That's what he says to them. He says, look, I could perform a miracle. I could kill them. I could let you kill them. I could end it all. But you don't deserve that. You don't deserve that. They came to kill me, so I performed a miracle. But now give them food, because you have to recognize this was my victory. You're an idolatrous king. I don't perform, you know, I don't just save you for no reason. I'll protect you for a little bit. I'll freeze time. I'll buy you time. So you can do tshuva. So you can change. So you can deserve it. But you think because they came to attack me, so I performed a miracle, you're going to kill the people of Aram? Are you out of your mind? And this is not your victory. It's mine. You don't deserve this. And I think that the same thing is happening in Beitar. Chazal are telling us that Rabbi Kiva had a grand vision. He saw Mashiach here. And others saw Bar Kokhba as the worst thing in the world, as a false Messiah. But then in the middle, you had Bar Kokhba, who was somewhere in the middle. He said, look, I don't want God to help me. I don't want God to hurt me. Which is not a pious thing to do, but it's not that terrible either. Right? He's saying, look, you know what? Maybe I don't deserve it. I don't deserve it. But leave me alone and I'll do it and I'll fight. And I'm fighting for Yerushalayim. I'll do it. And Elazar HaModah, he says, look, he's not terrible. He's not great. Just don't judge him. Leave him alone. Buy time. Buy time. That's the moment that the Midrash focuses on. That there was this period during the Churban where Elazar HaModah was holding it in abeyance, was saying, look, just buy time. Let them learn. Let them figure out they can't do it without you. Let them figure out that they need to deserve it. He was buying them time. Just don't judge them today. Tomorrow will bring something else. And there was an opportunity for Bar Kokhba to wake up and say, why am I saying to God, don't help me? Even if you take the radical read of the Midrash, Bar Kokhba is so strong that even without God helping him, he's managing to beat the Romans. At some point he should wake up and say, but why? If I'm doing the right thing and I'm fighting God's battle, so let him help me. And he should have woken up and said, well, maybe we don't deserve it. Maybe there's a reason this is all happening. So Elazar HaModah every morning would get up and say, God, give them another day. Another day. Another day. Like Elisha. Don't let Aram beat them today. Right? I'll defuse it, but I won't save them. Because salvation, to actually save them when they don't deserve it. So then we'll just be in the same spiritual rut in another 10 years, another 15 years, another 20 years, another 50 years. I don't know. I'll save them. I'll buy them time. Because God doesn't want to destroy them. God doesn't want to punish them. Don't judge them today. And I don't want to get into big visions. I don't want to get into big dreams. I'm not Rabbi Akiva. I don't know if this is Mashiach. I don't know if he's a Navi Sheker. I just know that there's a moment here that we can save. So buy time. Don't judge them today. And then the Midrash tells you the tragedy of the story is Bar Kokhba doesn't realize what he has. Bar Kokhba is being saved day after day. So like the king in Yisrael, as soon as things get bad, right? There's a moment, what does he do? He blames Elazar HaModah. Right? He blames Elisha. The king says, get me Elisha's head. Because he thinks, oh, Elisha didn't perform a miracle. It's his fault. Why didn't he kill Aram? Why didn't he let me kill Aram? He didn't look at himself and say, well, maybe Elisha didn't let me kill Aram because I didn't deserve to kill Aram. I didn't deserve an untempered victory over Aram. He didn't look in the mirror and say, maybe there was a reason. And Bar Kokhba doesn't take the opportunity. He had day after day of Elazar HaModah saving him, buying him time. So maybe he would recognize what he had to do. Maybe Bnei Yisrael would do tshuva. Maybe he would recognize and say, God, you know what? Don't just not help me. Help me because I represent you. Maybe he would tone down the arrogance, the hubris. But instead, like the king, what does he do? Like the king in the time of Elisha, he says, as soon as things start to go wrong, as soon as he has a doubt, I'll kill him. I'll kill him. He's not helping me. All right, if he's not going to perform miracles, right? It can't be that he's the reason I'm winning. It can't be. And the Bosco comes out and says, are you stupid? You had someone buying you time. You had someone giving you a chance and you squandered it because you were so arrogant. Because you thought you deserved miracles. You thought you were doing it by yourself. Now you're going to suffer the consequences. The Elisha story has a happy ending. Hashem lets Elisha perform another miracle to save the Jews again, buy them more time. But the Korban doesn't. Hashem says, that's it. Right? You kill Elazar HaModah, you give up on that, then fine, you'll face the consequences. I'll judge you today. I'll judge you today and I'll give you what you deserve. And the Midrash tells us that one of the greatest tragedies that we mourn on Tisha B'Av is that of lost opportunity. That God didn't kill us right away. He didn't punish us right away. He stalled for time. He let people stall for time. He let Elazar HaModah stall for time when we didn't deserve it. When we were too arrogant. When we should have looked at ourselves and realized, why should God let us win it all? But instead of that, We became so full of ourselves. We became so convinced that we could do this without God, that we didn't need to change. We didn't need to change who we were, what we did. And then Bar Kokhba ends up killing Re'elazar Modai because he's so convinced that it's him, he doesn't realize that the secret lay with the person he just murdered. And that's what we mourn on Tisha B'Av. We mourn those lost opportunities. And the Midrash reminds us that on Tisha B'Av, we have to realize that we can't just rely on miracles. We can't have a magieli, right? It's coming to me attitude, and think, right? If things aren't going well, someone else is at fault. I'll take it out on Elisha. I'll take it out on Elazar Modai. For whatever reason, there are these people. There are these reasons that God delays His punishment, that He gives us time. But our responsibility is to take advantage of that time. If we don't, if we come to believe that God's mercy is indicative of the fact that we are actually deserving, then we'll never change. And if we never change, then God will at some point say, enough is enough. And that's the tragedy of Bar Kokhba and Re'elazar Modai, that lost moment of opportunity that he squandered, that he destroyed. And the message of the Midrash is for us to realize that if we want things to change, we can't have an attitude, it's coming to me, I deserve it. We have to realize we don't deserve it. But in order to reverse the course of history, what we need to do is not demand things from God, but change ourselves so that we deserve them.